Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing well, thank you, and ready to discuss the issues of coronavirus and what are we going to do, and is it on the wane, or is it getting perked up? Are we in the first phase, second phase? Some people said there'll be a third phase. Some people say there's going to be a new virus soon. Some people say that the only thing that we need is a vaccine.
Yeah.
So we'll get the vaccine. Everybody will be happy, and there's a race for that. But I think there's a race against logic and reasoning. And we've talked about this a whole lot, you know, the danger of the virus versus the danger of the lockdown. You know, more and more people are talking about the danger of the lockdown. But I don't think it should be an exchange. Okay, we'll sacrifice so many lives by lightening up on the lockdown and but save lives elsewhere. Because I don't think it's that. I think if you do the right thing both places, you're maximizing the, you know, our efforts to preserve life and sanity. But we came across this study that makes the claim, and it seems logical, but I'm not sure how they get this number, but it's 29 times likely that you'll die from the lockdown than you will from the virus. And we've said that it is. But, you know, I think it's going to be real hard to identify those individuals that have lost their jobs and committed suicide and kind of all kinds of complications. But think about the complication of finding out who died from the virus.
Yeah.
Now, that's not very scientific either. They come up with all kinds of things. And yesterday we mentioned how they changed the rules in the middle of the game. Well, we used to say this, but we say this now. We have to keep the numbers up because we have to keep the people scared. And so there's people in this business of figuring things out sincerely, you know, as health officials, and they want to do what's right. And then there's others who have ulterior motives. Some people want to emphasize getting a vaccine, and some people emphasize other sinister reasons why governments have to be in charge of everything, and they come up with these stories. But I do. I really believe that it's more deaths are lost due to the reaction. But even this whole thing, when I try to sort it out, I think that there's two things I think of the medical part first, and that's how they get everybody's attention, and then I think it's blown out of proportions to scare people, and people get hysterical about it. But then there's an economic issue, but I think of the civil liberty issue. You know, if this is justified, how much civil liberties will or should people give up? Or is it any liberty are you supposed to give up any liberty? And I've argued the case, which usually got a firm applause from, would be to don't ever give up any liberty for safety and security. And I think it could apply here because people are rolling over. When's it coming? Do anything, and we'll get into this in this program, on how anxious people are and what kind of threats and intimidation, what kind of punishments there'll be, and what will be the consequence of mass inoculation. So there's a lot of ramifications for that. But it is interesting that somebody came up and tried to monetize this or digitalize it and tell us exactly how many. I don't think it's possible to do that because both sides have some variables, but I definitely think there's more, it makes it more complex, and more people do die from the government reaction and the scaremongering and how the people react to this, because, you know, they get frightened and then they support some very bad ideas.
And we wanted to lead with this because this really captures the idea instead of what? Because we did all the lockdowns, we shut down the economy, a lot of it's not coming back, most of it may not be coming back. In the fight against this coronavirus, which, as we keep saying every day, is petering out when it comes to deaths, instead of what? And the instead of what is how many people are dying because of the lockdowns. And it was Bill Sardi, who's done so much great work on LouRockwell.com, who put up this article. And it cites a South African data analyst who did a study and discovered, according to his figures, that you may have 29 deaths because of the lockdown for every death because of the actual COVID. And he has some interesting backups for it. For example, in New York City, 97.4% of the people that died had one or more serious comorbidity. And that's so important, and that's why you had such a low death rate among the vast majority of society. People under 55 virtually aren't dying from this at all unless they have serious health concerns. But people under 55 are dying quite a bit, in fact, in a way related to the lockdown. You have a lot of people, and thank God it hasn't hit the U.S. yet, but it may well when you're talking about mass famine.
Right.
When the whole economic system shuts down, the whole chain shuts. We have some hints of it with the beef shortage, et cetera, but we haven't had that famine. But across the rest of the world that has shut down, you're seeing famine that may kill millions, even hundreds of millions of people in the name of fighting a virus that's killed a lot less than that.
Yeah, and we've talked about this. On a shutdown and doing this thing, it might just prolong the agony, and the numbers don't really change. It sort of reminds me in economics, you know, when governments make mistakes through the Federal Reserve financing, that you eventually have to have corrections, and you end up with the virus of the depression and recession. And they have found out over the years, even though nobody really believes it now, but Austrian economics teaches, well, there are corrections. Let the market take care of it. Let the debt be liquidated. You know, do what is necessary. Because if you do that and get rid of the mistakes, people will react in a positive way and you go back to growth. This is sort of this way, too. It's quite possible that we would have been much further along by now if they had zero lockdowns.
Yeah.
You know, in order to find out who's going to get the virus or not, and how much herd immunity there'll be. And some people argue back and forth on this because there's still very, very strong sentiment for mask and social distancing, and that's going to be their whole solution for this problem. And yet now the statistics are all over the place. That they have to always come up with a new statistics, and in order to keep the people on edge and being willing to do what the government say. And there are people who say, you know, I want to get back to work, and I want to do all these things. So this is something that is going to be around for a while, because they're not going to back off. And they're almost, yesterday we made the comment, they're almost worried that they can't even call it an epidemic anymore.
Yeah, that's what's happening. Well, speaking of that exact same thing, here's our first graphic. Here's the poster boy for not letting things fall where they may. The whole idea, of course, here's Fauci. Anthony Fauci warns that the U.S. is knee-deep in the first wave of coronavirus cases, and prognosis is really not good. Well, that was the whole point of this idea that you lock down for 15 days or lock down for however many days, not to eliminate people from getting infected, but to flatten the curve, slow the progress of the disease, of the infection, so that hospitals can keep up. So this idea that somehow Fauci is now shocked that people are still getting infected, either he's being dishonest or he's got a screw loose upstairs, because that was the whole idea. People will continue to get infected, and it'll happen in a longer period of time. But this article, where he talks about the prognosis, is really good. He's also pushing another shibboleth that is going over and over, and it's really just to attack states like Texas and the other states that didn't lock down as hard as New York, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. You never hear about them anymore, because he says some of the states opened too quickly, and that's why Texas is having record numbers. It's not because, hey, get your free testing here, we'll get it back to you in 5 minutes, no problem, with the tests that are totally contaminated. But here's what Fauci said. A series of circumstances associated with various cities and states trying to open up has led to a situation where we have record-breaking cases. but again, trying to demonize states like Texas that didn't fully lock down, to Abbott's credit, and we slam him a lot, but he didn't do with Pennsylvania. Let's look at numbers. Let's not just look at what Fauci's saying. New Jersey, lockdown state. 171 deaths per 100,000 people. That's the death rate. New York, lockdown. 166 deaths per 100,000 persons in the state. Texas, everyone's going crazy about Texas. Oh my gosh, it's the huge spike. 9 deaths per 100,000 persons. 171, New Jersey, 9, Texas. And that's the truth. forget about what Fauci's saying about we opened up too soon. We shouldn't have locked down at all.
Well, they're not listening to that statistic because that'll end their game that they play, because high on their agenda is getting the vaccine. You hear that incessantly, and there's a lot of companies involved. There'll be a lot of rewards for this, and it's. I find that there's even sort of political rewards in this. The different countries and a sort of a nationalistic thing. Who's going to get it and who's going to benefit by it? So there's a lot of activity, and then there's some people who question, well, you're never going to get it. This is going to be very hard, and nature's going to be better than any vaccine you get. So there's a lot of controversy. That's why the market needs to sort this out, not the politicians and the bureaucrats. And the profiteers. But there is a big rush, you know, for a vaccine. And I've told the story before, because the first week I was in Congress in 1976, we had the swine flu come in. And Ford was president, and it was a national issue. Everybody was going to get the flu. It was very, very deadly. And the election was coming up soon. Election would be tight. And I got there in April. So within a week or two, we had this major vote. It was one of my first votes. And it was for an appropriation, a significant appropriation, not billions, but millions of dollars to get a vaccine and get it out there, inoculate everybody. They got the vaccine out, and it wasn't very successful. Two of us voted against it, myself and another doctor, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But to get the vaccine out, and they did inoculate a lot of people, but they found out afterwards, like we're trying to do now, when the deaths settle, add up to these numbers, and it found out that nobody died from the flu, and more people died from the vaccine. You know, getting the shot. And a lot of people got Guillain-Barré syndrome and had the temporary paralysis. So the rushing to get something for political reasons or for monetary reasons is not the way to go. I mean, just hardcore principles of liberty plus principles of people making economic decisions that make more sense. But as soon as government gets involved in making medical decisions, there's a bunch of people who hover around there to try to take advantage of it, namely drug companies.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
there, and they're all over the place in Washington. They are. The more I've looked at this, even in the last couple years, the more I realize how powerful and how much money they're spending, how many dollars are involved. You know, for the money and the drug industry.
Yeah, and speaking of which, is Fauci the poster boy for we need a new vaccine? Of course, Gottlieb is on always talking about that. But, you know, thanks to True Pundit, which brought this to my attention, and I went and researched it, I went on the website, the National Institutes for Health, which has been the employer of Dr. Fauci since 1968, he's still there. Talk about a statue that should be pulled down. But he's been there since 68. Back in August 22nd, 2005, let's put up this next graphic, Dr. Paul. You're going to really enjoy this. This is a publication of the National Institutes for Health, August 22nd, 2005. Chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. And if you go through this, you talk about how chloroquine as such is extremely effective as a treatment against coronavirus. This is under Fauci. He didn't write it, but it's certainly under him, and he would have been aware of this in 2005. Now, why all of a sudden does chloroquine have the scarlet letter on it when they were so keen on it back then?
You know, and I think this has been sorted out. We've had spokesmen on our program, other physicians who have treated people with chloroquine, and it's you have to understand it, because some people could benefit maybe in the early part rather than somebody that's in an intensive care unit. And I think medicine has sort of that. That drug has been around for a long time. It's related to tuberculosis, treating tuberculosis, and this cross immunity is a big issue. But that's been studied. But chloroquine's cheap. What do you want to do? Give the patients a deal?
Yeah.
I mean, you got anything that's good is going to cost a lot and taste bad.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but this remdesivir is a new drug, very, very expensive, and they don't have any more proof that that's the answer. If that would be the case, it would be a ball game over.
Yeah.
But they keep trying to push that and actually write rules against using chloroquine.
Yeah, exactly. Well, before we move on to our next segment, I wanted to go through quickly the Houston hospital thing, because that's also the key for trashing Texas. And let's look at this next slide really quick. Concern the Texas Medical Center about the dramatic slope upward. This is back in mid-June. Let's go to the next one. I looked at Texas Medical Center this morning. This is the latest figures as of July 5th, which is Sunday. And this has to do with their bed status as of July 5th. And it's hard to see, but up in the upper left, you can see that black triangle. That's where they are now. And below it is the capacity. And this is tough to look at, but look at the next one, too. It's important to look at. The bed capacity, right now they have 589 current COVID-19 patients, a total of 1,300 total ICU beds occupied. That just means they're in phase one. They've filled up phase one. Okay, that's to be expected. But you have phase two, you have phase three, and you have possible additional intensive care capacity. So, yes, you should think about it. Should be concerned about it, what might happen. But as of right now, what they're saying is not true. And let's just do the last one on the Texas, on the Houston hospitals. And here's just something I pulled from Google this morning. And again, Mayor warns Houston hospitals could be overwhelmed in 2 weeks. That's what they said a month and a half ago. It never happened. And then here, below it, even more, the New York Times putting out that fear. As coronavirus slams Houston hospitals, it's like New York all over again. Well, we talked about what New York is, and Texas ain't New York, and we talked about the truth of Houston hospitals. They're not overwhelmed.
Okay, they've never been overwhelmed, but they made a lot of mistakes, and they spent a lot of money. They brought those two big ships in to send them out of the hospital, and they never got any patients. And also, I think it was a football field. Yeah. These are artificial, these
millions
emergency hospitals. Millions and millions, all making mistakes. That's malinvestment, you know, and it has nothing to do with a good medical decision in public health. And that has, of course, been going on for a long time. As soon as you get bureaucrats and politicians making mistakes, they're not even oriented to what they're supposed to be talking about. And that, of course, is my defense of saying that government should be out of medicine.
Yeah.
They're not good doctors. You know, you send a doctor to Washington who knows what will happen. They start thinking that they can treat the world. So, and it's something. But all that mess and miscalculation, and they're still doing it.
Still,
it's still in the
it.
News that, you know, there's never enough room. You better get ready. There'll be a new virus. And it's good that we get to practice this, because we'll know. We're like, a drill. You know, we're
yeah.
going through a drill for the next time, because there will be a next time. And I read something yesterday that really disgusted me. Just be prepared. They're never going to get rid of face masks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine such a argument as that? And yet that's possibly true. It's going to, change so much. And when you think about, you know, we talked about the deaths that occur under the lockdown, and I said it's so hard to measure that. Think of the tens of thousands, if not millions, of people who've been laid off in the small restaurants.
Yeah, yeah.
And the small shops and things like that. They don't count. We'll send them a check. That'll tide them over for a month or two,
yeah.
And that'll be it. And just get the election over.
Yeah.
You know, so that's get the economy to perk up. But there's still a lot of suffering yet to come from making these mistakes. And there's not much chance right now that all of a sudden they're going to come to their sanity.
No.
Because, you know, as libertarians, if somebody can show that a vaccine is good, they have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, that when it was much more privately oriented. I'm sure there was some government money involved with polio, but I can remember my mother going door to door with a march of dimes.
Yeah.
She did every year and raised that money. And I remember her admonition about, you know, this summer I don't think you should be swimming in the swimming pools, because they weren't sure.
Yeah.
But it was never an edict coming down from a high that you couldn't do it. And they finally ended up with two vaccines, and by that time there might have been herd immunity too, but
yeah.
Eventually it just disappeared.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's put up this next graphic, and Dr. Paul, we can talk about the next segment, because I think this is something that you'll want to address when you talk about get medicine out of politics. Let's put up that next picture if we can. This is from our good friend Bob Wenzel over at Target Liberty. New England Journal of Medicine suggests employment suspension for COVID vaccine noncompliance. Here's your vaccine. If you don't take it, you're out of work. That is pretty scary. with them getting involved in that.
Yeah, that to me is a real big deal. It's threatening. And one of the reasons why some people say, you know, I think it is dangerous and we have to keep doing that and we'll use the vaccine if necessary. But in the meantime, don't keep me from working. Let me make the decision and I'll go out because I want my job. Yes, it's very important to maintain our health and we should do that and do our best. And they don't even take our position of just getting the government out completely, but they sure take our position on saying, look, don't threaten me. And can you imagine now those people who want to go back now when they say, well, we have an answer. And here, all you have to do is sign this paper and give this vaccine. And Bill Gates said it was okay.
Yeah,
Gates said it'd be fine. No danger at all because of my goals are a little bit different than your goals. And then they do it. But threatening a person's life and livelihood is pretty radical. It's hardly the way to run a republic since a republic is supposed to run on its own with personal decisions and voluntary answers to all our problems. And we're so far removed from that everybody looks to the government and believe the government is all wise. And we mentioned yesterday, how come they don't trust the government except on coronavirus?
Except yeah,
but they'll lose their trust in the government next year. Then we'll say, why did we believe that junk?
Yeah. You know? Hopefully they will say that.
Yeah, there's hope.
I read this, and I'm not saying this is absolutely true. I don't know, but it's interesting that, you know, when they've had to revise the death rate from COVID way down from what they first scared everyone with. Someone was writing that actually the death rate from vaccines is higher now than the death rate from COVID. So if people want to make informed decisions with their health, they won't be able to because they'll risk losing their job. And nobody wants to lose their job. It's very difficult to retool. But I'm going to move, Dr. Paul, into the final segment, for me at least, if you're ready.
Right.
And I want to talk a little bit. You may want to comment on this. But I want to explain a little bit about the mask mandate here in Texas. I think it's very important. There's a lot of confusion about it. And if we can actually pull up that next. This is the actual wording from Governor Abbott on masks in Texas. Because you never know this from the media coverage. This is what the governor said. Every person in Texas shall wear a face covering over his nose and mouth when inside a commercial entity or other building or space open to the public, or when in an outdoor space, wherever it is not possible to maintain 6 feet of social distancing from another person, not in the same household. This is not a mask mandate. Again, not a mask mandate. What it is saying that if you cannot maintain social distance, you should wear a mask indoors or outdoors. And this is what we've had all along. And what's interesting is someone pointed this out on a great Facebook group that I'm in Open Texas. There's no enforcement mechanism in the governor's mandate for businesses. So the idea that a business says, hey, you can't come in, it's illegal for you to come in without a mask because the governor said, read it, he doesn't say that. There's only a provision for fining an individual. So if I go into HEB and I start breathing on people 2 feet away, coughing on them, then I could face this $250 fine. So it's not to say that it's great, but there's no enforcement on the individual, you know. And the same is true, actually, with the local. And it's interesting. I was looking at some other county mandates and city mandates, and they're all pretty much identical to ours here in Lake Jackson, which is not that you have to wear a mask, as the media portrayed it and our own local paper portrayed it, but what it did, and it did elsewhere in other counties in Texas, it said, you businesses, you must develop a plan, a business plan, which include a health and safety policy. Not that you have to force masks. You must have a policy and you must post it on your business saying that if you cannot distance while you're in this business 6 feet, then you should wear a mask. That's all it says, and it's been so misrepresented. And you go into the stores, Dr. Paul, and everyone is droning along with their mask, 99% of the people. You have to read the legislation. You have to read these mandates because they know they can't force it, so they're weaseling around it.
You know, in medicine, there was an answer to this because it was voluntary. If somebody was sick and had a deficiency in their immunity or we were doing surgery, it wasn't discussed. We just did it. So it was targeted. It was done all the time. I spent a lot of hours with a mask on. But this is different. This is being mandated and claiming that it's going to keep you from getting an illness that's going to kill you. And I think there are two main reasons why I think that we should do our best to dispel the fear of the of not having people wearing a mask. First, it doesn't help the health. If it's targeted, you know, for these incidences, yes, we'll do that. But not for everybody doing it every place you go. And this, there's no proof that it's really cutting back down on the disease. And also, it's the issue of personal liberty and personal choices that, the mask is worn a lot in hospitals and operating room, but it's done, you know, differently. It's done locally and voluntary choices, and you make these decisions. It's not done by the bureaucrats and the authoritarians in Washington. So it's just a shame that we've gotten to this point where mostly hysteria drives this, and if things seem to be straightening out and not nearly as serious and dangerous as they was once said, they'll go around, and they have. They go around and look for more danger around the corner. Well, there'll be another one. There's another virus next year coming. So be prepared, and don't be easy. Be scared. And they've done a pretty good job on it, unfortunately. But there's a lot of American people waking up right now and sick and tired of it, and they'd like to go out and play football and go to football game. I still think personally that it taps into my sense, its sensitivity about what they're doing is not having baseball. You know, baseball is supposed to bring people together, but no, what do? You either can't watch it, or the stadium's empty, or whatever. And if I thought that was the way you save the world and nobody would be ill, you know, I'd have to reconsider my adamant defense of individual liberty and personal choices, but that's not the case. I don't think you ever have to make a choice between government rules and regulations and your liberty. I think that liberty does get the answers. If you need a little bit of more guidance, whether it comes from home or your neighborhood or your hospitals or whatever, you take it. But once you set it up, and this is not just, our state governments and our local governments and our federal governments, it's this world government too, you know, WHO. They think they know what's best if somebody slips up. So this dependency on authoritarianism versus the confidence of individualism is the challenge everybody should consider. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.